All right. Welcome once again, everybody, to our continued coverage here of human trafficking. Of course, the Michigan Abolitionist Project is who we've partnered with. And I'll be honest, when we first started this, a lot of stuff I didn't know. I was very ignorant to the topic, but I am happy to say that this has been super educational, and hopefully you've tuned in for some of our previous podcast, and we're going to do kind of the same thing. So first, let's just have the ladies once again introduce themselves. Heather, why don't you start? Tell us a little bit about what you do.
I am the West Michigan Program Coordinator for the Michigan Abolitionist Project, and my main role is to coordinate the Southwest Michigan Human Trafficking Task Force down here in St. Joe.
Perfect. Kind of in our neck of the woods. And now Emily over on the other side of the state, just tell us a little bit about what you do.
Yep. So I'm Emily, and I'm MAP's other program coordinator on more of the southeast side of Michigan. And similar to what Heather does, I help with our volunteers, our community groups, our events, our Freedom Coalition, anything program or initiative related. That's what Heather and I do.
Busy, busy. Good. Well, and there's a lot to do. Well, again, like I've mentioned, we've had previous podcasts. Make sure you check out our podcast page to find out more of this kind of educational Q&A about human trafficking. We've covered a lot, and we still have a lot of stuff to cover. So today we want to talk about traffickers. Okay. So obviously in the human trafficking world, you have the victims of it, victims and survivors. And then you also have the traffickers themselves, the people perpetrating this. And in my mind, if I were to say a human trafficker, a lot of people are going to think of maybe some sleazy guy with slick back hair and a gold chain, maybe wearing a track suit, kind of how movie and media makes them out. Pimps, you got the guy with the furry hat, that. It's almost kind of jokingly done or kind of tongue-in-cheek done, but we want to really kind of shed a light on this. So let's kind of dive into the first part of this, which is, who are they, what they do, and why they do what they do. Heather, if you want to kick things off for us, go for it.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for prefacing it with that too, Brock. Because yeah, I think that our media and Hollywood really paints a picture, kind of a glorious picture of what it means to be a pimp. And so, yeah, we're just going to talk a little bit more about kind of in the human trafficking world, what the word pimp actually means. So when we're talking about a trafficker, also other words that people will use to define them would be a pimp or a trafficker, a facilitator. They're all used synonymously, but a trafficker is anyone who profits from the exploitation of others through forced labor or commercial sex, which we talked about in the previous episodes. And we're going to explain a little bit more about the way that they lure and control victims. But at its core, human traffickers run the illicit business of stealing freedom for profit.
Okay.
So, yeah. And again, as we mentioned before in the other episodes, it's a huge criminal industry. They make about $150 billion annually, and trafficking is considered the fastest growing type of organized crime, third largest criminal activity in the world.
You read those facts, it's baffling to me, because again, we've seen, you know, just through media, and I think that's the big thing today to kind of dispel is what is shown us in the media. And almost joking, like you said, we glorify it, keep the pimp hand strong, which I mean people talk about all the time, like that's a thing in a lot of media, and now we really want to shine a light on the evil that they do. So the big broad question: who are they? What are the kind of the typical demographics of these people, of these traffickers? Emily, you want to take that one?
Yeah. So just as victim demographics vary, by ethnic background, gender, sex, traffickers' demographics also vary. In fact, traffickers and their victims often share the same national, ethnic, and cultural background, which actually allows the trafficker to better understand and exploit the vulnerabilities of their victims. On the contrary, there are also traffickers, of course, who use privilege, wealth, and power to lure in and control victims. We saw that with Jeffrey Epstein, for example. I don't want to name drop or anything, but that's an example of power and privilege to take advantage of somebody. Also, those who choose to pimp and traffic others for sexual exploitation might also have backgrounds that include physical and sexual abuse, drug and alcohol addiction, and family members who are in the sex trade. Some other life experiences may include, they grew up around it. Maybe they saw pimps in their family, their neighborhood. Maybe it was a family business and they inherited that business. Like I said, maybe they experienced childhood sexual abuse themselves and they went on to then become the perpetrator or make sure they were never put in that victim role again and instead go on to victimize others. They were involved in drug trafficking perhaps and then switched over to human trafficking because they believe it could be more lucrative. You know, you can only sell a drug one time. Whereas in a human, you can sell a human over and over again without having to, you know, quote unquote, re-up your supply. So there could be some more money to be made. Previously exploited in brothels. So this could mean older women who could no longer serve as clients. Perhaps they went on to become the trafficker, or some would call that, a bottom, mm-hmm. a bottom D.
Yeah.
And then maybe they started as amateurs in the field and eventually moved their way up to a higher rung in the trafficking hierarchy. So lots of different ways that someone could become a trafficker, but definitely like being around it in their upbringing, seeing others doing it. Moreover, traffickers can be lone individuals or extensive criminal networks. They can be business owners, members of a gang, parents, family members of victims, intimate partners, which we will definitely get into in just a second, owners of farms, restaurants, or even powerful corporate executives or government representatives. They've all been found guilty of human trafficking.
I do have a question here as we're talking about this, and because you brought up Jeff Bezos. And yeah, conspiracy. The people now, okay, so you have like, and I know we see this hierarchy, okay. Would the people that were working for him, I know there's different levels, but would that be considered like, okay, so you have Bezos and then the one actress that was part of it, I cannot think of her name, that was recruiting people. Would they be considered victims in this scenario because they maybe got pulled into it, or are they now part of, I guess.
They were part of the scheme. They were making money. If they were making money off the situation, they're part of the problem. They could definitely they are considered the recruiters. I mean, if they transported anybody, that's all in that definition of human trafficking. If you're transporting, harboring, obtaining anybody, helping in that process in any way, you are part of the issue and you can be charged with human trafficking.
Gotcha.
Are you going to add anything?
Well, I was just going to say, now we don't know if any of the people that were involved in it, you know, if their choice of being in it was because they were trying to get out of being trafficked or, you know, or that was part of them being trafficked, you know, that's kind of like the deeper level, anyone that's involved in any aspect of it. And I think, I can't remember her name either, but I think that she is being charged or has been charged
it's in there. That whole, it's amazing how quiet that's all become. It's just like this huge thing and then gone. Which I won't put on my tinfoil hat, the conspiracy theories I have going on around that, but that's neither here nor there. That's neither here nor there.
I think part of it too is just at some point this became normalized for this trafficker. At some point in their minds, it became normalized that this is something that they can do, and it is a good way to use their time and life.
And inviting others to participate.
Yeah.
Come to my island and this is what happens here. And and we think about R. Kelly too. Like he was using his power and fame.
Ron Jeremy I just found out about Ron Jeremy too. What's going on with all of that, man? Oh man. So, and again, this is why we're doing this, because this is a serious problem, and that's why we want to shed a light on it to put an end to it as we continue this on. So, well, I'm glad. Thank you for explaining that. It was rolling around in my head. Now let's kind of build off of what Emily was talking about there. What about females? You know, I think sometimes, and I'm probably the vast majority are males but are females ever pimps? Are they ever on that trafficking side of it?
Yeah, they are. Most people do think that men are the primary traffickers, and in a lot of situations they are. Mm-hmm. But the United Nations, their Office on Drugs and Crime, they found that in some parts of the world, women actually play a more prominent role in human trafficking. So I think it also depends on where, you know, what country you're in, where you're at. In the US, it's probably more male. But again, like we were mentioning just earlier, that it might be because they were former victims and they become perpetrators because they want to escape their slavery. And so, or because these women might be seen as more successful as recruiters and traffickers instead of as being victims. And sometimes they're seen as more likely to be trusted, less likely to be suspected of a crime. So the actual trafficker, or maybe like the ring or industry that they're involved in sees that women won't be caught as easily, maybe, or are more trusted by other women. Mm-hmm. But regardless of what they look like or where they come from, traffickers are always master manipulators. I think that's like one of our biggest words that we use when we talk about traffickers, is that they are master manipulators. They are experts. They're very good at what they do. Some other personality traits that we see of a trafficker. Like you were saying, Brock, you know, typically we think of like, yeah, a creepy old man, or, you know, just a person that you look at them and you know they're a bad person. Mm-hmm. When we think of trafficking and traffickers, that it is like, I am going to be able to know that this person is a trafficker. But typically, and again, they're smart. Mm-hmm. So typically, we actually, when we learn about traffickers, they are actually... So a characteristic that usually defines them is that they're very charming. Many survivors of trafficking will say, you know, he was so suave. He came across as he looked really nice. He had a lot of money. He was so charming. He said all the right things in all the right ways and bought me all these gifts. And it is more like your... typical, like the quintessential person that like you would want to be your boyfriend or girlfriend or in a romantic situation. Traffickers are typically very charming, very charismatic. They do usually have a big personality, a grandiose sense of self, an entitlement. Typically they lack empathy. They might think of themselves as a businessman or a businesswoman. We might see them as that. They might present as that as well. Another characteristic that for sure is in all of them is that they're pathological liars. They're always making false promises and obviously lying to get the victims to be trafficked. Mm-hmm. Many times there's verbal and physical aggression, many also will have impulsive behavior, maybe like gambling, drinking, addictions, that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, the common thread with traffickers is that each of them are willing to exploit other human beings for profit.
As we talked about this, and again, I know we're kind of on that Bezos train and what's going on. It's just, it always baffles me how these people can go to bed at night.
Epstein.
How they go to bed at night. I'm so floored by it. It's like you're doing all this terrible stuff and they just go to bed, and I don't get it. I feel bad when I lie to my wife about not doing laundry and I can't sleep in. And it's just, but again, you list off those characteristics and that entitlement and that feeling of, I don't know. It's just unbelievable. It's just baffling to me. And again, men and women on both sides of this coin that are doing that, and people involved in this. So this kind of leads into the next thing, and a very, I think, big question people have is, how does this happen? How are people trafficked? You'd think it'd be pretty obvious to like point out like, that doesn't seem right. Well, like we should do something. How are people trafficked? How does this happen under our noses, really, is what we're looking at.
Right. So because when we think of it, we think, oh, yeah, well, it's the girl getting off the plane for like in I can't think of taken, or it's, you know, kids getting stolen outside of their houses, yes, and thrown into a white van, or someone in the parking lot. But typically the way that it happens is just right under our noses in a way that we don't notice or see at all. The way that we usually explain how trafficking happens, how traffickers do it, is three words: target, trick, and traumatize. So first, a trafficker is going to target a victim. And when we're talking about traffickers, again, they are smart. They are expert profilers. They look for vulnerabilities in people. And when they find those vulnerabilities, they hit on them. And hone in on those vulnerabilities and try and offer a solution. So when we're talking about those that are especially vulnerable, typically one of our most vulnerable populations are runaway and homeless youth. And so a trafficker might see a young person who has run away from home. Maybe they're at a park, sleeping at a park, or maybe they are at a homeless shelter, or they catch them, I don't know, at the mall, looking down and out. But they notice and see that vulnerability, and start to ask questions. You know, what's a pretty girl like you doing out here at sleeping on a bench in the park? Do you need a place to stay? I have a place to stay. I have a safe home that you could just come and stay with me. Mm-hmm. Or you look hungry. Can I take you out to breakfast? Like, you let me get you some breakfast. And then they keep hanging out. Oh, let's get some lunch. Let's get some dinner. You're really beautiful. I would love to be your boyfriend. Or, you know, you can flip it too for women on the other side. The way that it typically happens is that they are traffickers are going to target some vulnerability that they see. So
kind of that low hanging fruit that's easy to pick off. Yep. And I think last podcast, Emily talked about that, you know, it's on the online side of when we were talking about, yeah, online. And you know, kind of putting out those little breadcrumbs and seeing who takes it, and the amount of work that goes into it too, that they do, you know, it's pretty astonishing what they target. And I guess when you lay it, it's like, okay, yeah, it's someone who's in need, someone who's struggling, abuse, whatever it may be, you find those ones and you pick on those vulnerabilities, and those are kind of the easy targets in that sense. Yeah. In that sense.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. So yeah, once they start targeting those vulnerabilities, then they trick. And so that I got a little bit into that, and I got ahead of myself when I was talking there. But although it's true that sometimes traffickers might forcibly kidnap their victims, again, it's not common. It's not smart, because if you kidnap someone, everybody's going to know about it. There's going to be Amber Alerts. There's probably going to be cameras somewhere. So the typical way that we see traffickers do it is as under the radar as they can be. And so they will trick these men, women, and kids into victimization using methods of fraud or coercion. Like we talked about in the beginning, force, fraud, or coercion. So many times we see this fraud and coercion, that they're making promises that are aimed at addressing those needs. So if they see a person that's in poverty, and this might be in like a labor trafficking situation, they see someone who's in poverty and they offer them a high paying job, saying, you know, come up to Michigan for the growing season this year and you'll make enough money for your family in 9 months to feed them for the next 5 years. And so they'll trick them in that way. They might see someone who has low self-esteem and offer a loving relationship. Traffickers can be very patient, very slick in their conquest. Listen to you stories of survivors who will say, you know, he was my boyfriend for months, mm-hmm, and he met my family, and, you know, and all of these things. I think people will say, you know, maybe there were some red flags, or, you know, it was weird that he bought her all of these things and she had all these new clothes, and, but like we said, many times they can just be very, very charming, and When it comes to like an intimate relationship, we usually call that Romeo pimping or boyfriending. This is actually the most common way that traffickers initiate a relationship with a potential victim in the US. And so, in these situations, traffickers carefully work to gain the victim's trust, and their goal is to create dependence. That everything they're doing is creating a dependence on them from the victim. And so, once they get to that point, typically what we'll see, especially in a boyfriending situation or Romeo pimp, is that at some point, however long, you know, it could be a few days, could be a few months, that they will ask the victim to move in with them. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of like the switch flips, and that's where we see that traumatizing come in.
Just to hop in real quick, because it you bring up this Romeo pimping, and yep. and you it's so weird because you don't want to think about this. Maybe he's just a nice guy, you know, like maybe he just likes buying.
Totally, yeah.
But it's interesting that those little things that can add up. And like, okay, well, it seems like he's a little needy, or, you know, maybe he's always around, or but they're not always necessarily, I'm putting this out there because it doesn't always mean that someone's, you know, being groomed for, you know, being trafficked. Yep. But it's interesting how they take all these, you know, nice characteristics and use them to twist and distort reality, and then eventually traumatize the person to gets them into that next level, which that's what we're going to talk about now, is the traumatizing side of this, that third T in there. So
yep. Yeah, absolutely. And again, you're right. Like there are wonderful relationships and people who do, you know, who are truly genuinely charming and who are good people and in and can be in relationships that are really great people. These are just things for us to be looking out for, and we're gonna go over, you know, some of those potential indicators that trafficking is happening. But you know, I mean, as with any beginning of any relationship that you're in, whether it's a friend or a romantic relationship, you should always be somewhat wary of the person until, you know them really, really, really well. And if in the course of your relationship, you find yourself continuing to isolate from maybe family and other people that are close to you, that's a sign that maybe potentially something could be happening. It's also a sign that something couldn't, but that isolation and dependence is really the goal of the trafficker. And so then that third part, target, so we've got target, trick, and then traumatize. That third part is kind of where they have created that dependence. The victim is dependent on them. So just to give an example of what the situation could look like, and we've heard many stories from survivors that like this, where the victim will move in or, you know, think they're moving in with their boyfriend, and they move in, and, you know, however many days, weeks later, the boyfriend or pimp will say, "Hey, we can't make rent this month. So I need your help. And I've lined up a few dates for you tonight, and just have sex with a few guys tonight, and you're going to make us enough money that after tonight, you don't have to do this anymore, and we're going to have enough rent for the rest of the month." Mm-hmm. And in this situation, you know, many times the victims are willing because they want, you know, they think that their boyfriend, their pimp, loves them, and they feel like they should help out in some way. And maybe they feel really uncomfortable with this way, but it will do the job, kind of thing. And so this is where, to some extent, we can see a lot of times victims cooperating in their own exploitation and abuse, believing that they have made this choice to do it independently, even though the trafficker has completely set up the situation to make it happen like this. This is also where we see trauma bonding come in. I think maybe one of the words that we've heard it called in the past is Stockholm syndrome, where the victims will kind of fall in love or come to care for those that are victimizing them. And so we see this a lot in trafficking, where the victims will, yeah, they care about their trafficker so much. They think it's their boyfriend. They think that they're going to marry him and have the rest of their life together. That, yeah, they use that to control them, keep them there. And yeah, also part of that traumatizing too is that you many times the relationship does turn to physical violence. There are just severe levels of trauma, physical abuse, psychological manipulation that comes into this traumatizing section of getting a victim into trafficking, what traffickers use.
That's a lot to unpack there, you know, and again, as we look, because it's not easy to talk about relationships that, you know, it can fall into this. And, I don't know. It's just, it's very baffling to me as someone in a relationship, you know, being married and everything like that. And looking at, you know, how these victims are slowly manipulated into this. And because what we all started off with is like, we all imagine certain people, we've all seen it this certain way on TV or in movies, but it really goes so much deeper than that. And all the different steps we've talked about. Yeah. And it's just, it's a lot to kind of think about. And you almost don't like, oh my God, like I never even thought about that. I never thought about, you know, how someone could be manipulated in that way by someone that they think cares about them. And like, we've talked about this at length. So yeah, a lot to unpack there, but great information all the way around. Emily, what would you like to add on this? I know there's still some other things we'd like to kind of delve into. So what would you like to add?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just to piggyback off that, I mean, like domestic abuse, that's been an issue that we've known about for a long time. And we think about like the red flags and just like abusive relationships and how that can get crazy. And then you ask like, well, why doesn't the victim leave? Why don't they leave the relationship? And even with domestic abuse situations, like someone will go back to their abuser 7-8 times on average because they're in love with them. That's their person. They are convinced and they want to prove to themselves like, hey, like if I just do this, this, and this right, they will love me again and will be the perfect relationship. And so a lot of similar, you know, red flags with domestic abuse, just abusive relationships in general. And we'll get into that in the next episode too, is like victim mindsets. Why don't they leave? What are those barriers that hold them back? Mm-hmm. But so just to get into a little more of what Heather was saying with the force, fraud, and coercion. There is no single method that traffickers use. It's usually like a combination of all different types of things. And then, like I said, similar to domestic violence, actually, there's an entire power and control wheel. So there's a diagram that explains the different tactics that people, you know, in all types of relationships, sex trafficking, labor trafficking, domestic abuse, whatever it may be, there's this power and control wheel that outlines the different types of abuse that can occur. And so just to touch on a few of those points, there can be economic abuse. So your trafficker might hold on to all your identification documents, your bank account, you know, information, forbid the victim to have access to their own finances. You know, they never even hold on to any of the money that they earn. Coercion and threats. So threats to do harm to the victim's family. Intimidation. So harms or kills others to show force, or, you know, just being physically aggressive, hitting the wall, throwing someone at the wall, intimidating person. Emotional abuse, might humiliate them in front of others, call them names, playing mind games. Emotional abuse is where you get that, you know, psychological manipulation, making the victim feel guilty and blaming them for the situation. So as Heather said, you know, for trafficking to really be successful, it's like the victim is, it's almost as if they've made this decision on their own and they've like walked into this willingly. And then the trafficker will really play on this, like, hey, like you're the one that's doing this. Mm-hmm. You're the, you know, dirty SLUT that's, you know, doing this every night. And so this isn't my problem, blah, blah, blah. Like you got your own self into this. And so minimizing the issue, denying, blaming them for their trouble. And that's why, you know, a little sneak peek. That's one of the reasons, one of the big reasons why victims don't report it or don't go to anyone, don't get help, because they just think like, wow, I really put this on myself. Like, I'm responsible for this. Like,
Sexual assault, same right there. So many victims don't go because they're embarrassed. They think people will be mad. They're like, what did I do? It's my fault. And that goes right into trafficking as well. Human trafficking. It's the same thing. And it's just a really interesting angle on this that, that a lot of people wouldn't think of. Well, ladies, once again, this has been so informative. And as I always say, it's not an easy topic to talk about, but I'm so glad that we're unloading all of this and hopefully giving people tools. And I'll share that wheel. Actually, Heather and Emily sent me that. So I will put that on the podcast as well. So as you're listening to this, you can look at that and follow along with all the information as well. So I think we've covered everything there in our notes. And so we'll kind of put a bow on this and we'll get to the next episode that people can check out here at WIRX.com. Just maybe end with some resources. If you want to kick people some ways, if they want to check out more, where can they go?
So our website always, and the PolarisProject.org, they definitely go into more depth of who are the traffickers, who are the victims, how does it happen? And remember, and to look back at our previous episodes, especially the episode on supply and demand, that's another reason why is this happening? There's a demand for commercial sex and, cheap goods, and traffickers take advantage of that and profit off it. So supply and demand will be helpful. Anything else, Heather?
One other thing, just specifically even for this episode, on our website, we do have a store, and we have a postcard that it's called The Five Disguises, and it basically gives you five kind of profiles of what a trafficker can look like and what they can look like in a relationship. And so we'd definitely encourage people to buy those and give them to your friends and family. And I think it's good for all of us to be aware of what those disguises are that people, exploitative people can use.
No such thing as too much information when it comes to this. And I guess I'll make sure everyone's linked up and have all that on there as well. So make sure you explore more and stay tuned for more on this. Emily, Heather, thank you again so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.